Love Street. She has a house and garden. I would like to see what happens. Lazy diamond studded flunkies. She has wisdom and knows what to do. She has me and she has you. There's the store where the creatures meet. I wonder what they do in there. Summer Sunday and a year. I guess I like it fine so far.
And welcome to the Strange Brew Podcast. My name's Jason Barnard, and that was The Doors and Love Street. And that's because there's a new compilation on Grapefruit Cherry Red. It is I See You Live on Love Street, music from Laurel Canyon, 1967 to 1975. And we've got David Wells here. David, we did a podcast a while back, which was on the LAC 1965 to 68. So is there a connection between the two?
Yes, there is really, yeah. That's kind of slightly earlier, mid-60s pop, basically, and going into psychedelia. This one is kind of moving the story on a year or two and focusing on the Laurel Canyon area of LA, where it's basically a musical community with a lot of the people who became big names in the industry settling down in the late 60s and like I say, settling down into an area where they were close to the recording studios and Sunset Strip, etc., but they had a little bit of space to live their own lives without being pestered really by fans or anything like that.
I think there's a bit of a story behind the song as well.
The Doors song, yeah, at that time, Jim Morrison and his partner, Pamela Courson, were living in the middle of the Laurel Canyon community at Rochdale Trail, just away, across the way from the Laurel Canyon Country Store. And the song was written with the lyric, I see you live on Love Street, there's this store where the creatures meet, which was about Morrison and his partner being amused by seeing all the weekend hippies, if you like, traipsing down to the country store to hang out and get groceries and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a track from the album Waiting for the Sun, not a single, but, yeah, that's where we've taken the title of the compilation from. I See You Live on Love Street, from that lyric.
The second track is The Factory, Smile, Let Your Life Begin. So this is the US Factory.
That's right. Obviously, there's a kind of small fan base for the British band The Factory, but this was Lyle George before he joined Frank Zappa and the Mothers, as I mentioned briefly, and then span off to form his own band, Little Feet. This was when they were back at the Factory, when they were being managed by Frank Zappa's manager, Herb Cohen, who got them to support the Mother's Invention for 10 days at the Whiskey. and actually put a couple of late 66 demos together. And this is one of them that came out as a single on Uni in the spring of 1967.
Next, we've got The Holy Mackerel and Wildflowers, and this is a bit more of that sort of psychedelic sound. Is this set a bit softer, would you say, than some of the previous box set?
Yeah, I would say the previous box set was more of a kind of a slightly tougher sound, 65, 66, when pop music was going into overdrive, if you like. This is a slightly softer sound. The interesting thing about this is that the band were led by Paul Williams, who was offered a solo deal by Reprise, but he didn't really want to go out as a solo performer, so he put a band together with his younger brother, Mentor Williams, who is probably best known as the writer and producer of Drift Away by Dobie Gray. This band was formed around Paul Williams, and pretty much every song on the album is written by him. The only exception, I think, is the song Wildflowers, which was written by Bob Harvey, who'd been the early bassist for Jefferson Airplane. So it's a bit ironic that the man who went on to be one of the great early 70s songwriters, writing for the Carpenters and such like, this is probably the best song on the album. It's not his, even though he's the singer.
Special flower left to buy.
And we have now the Sunshine Company, I Need You. Is there a bit of a connection with some of the band members? And is it Loggins and Messina?
Yeah, a couple of them went on to play with Loggins and Messina. One of them was also in the helped out the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. But this is a revamp of George Harrison's I Need You, which, to be honest, probably isn't one of the stronger George Harrison songs. But they make it their own, really. It's a lovely kind of mellow, late night folky arrangement. Some of the nice lead female vocals as well. The female singer, Mary Nance, lived in Laurel Canyon at the time in a hangout that she used to call the Hobbit House. Tolkien was everywhere in the late 60s and obviously infiltrated Laurel Canyon as well.
Did Mary Nance leave the industry? Because I don't recall hearing much of her.
She went back to college. A lot of these musicians were pretty young at the time, and quite a few of them had their moment in the sun, if you like, and then they went back to complete their education, and she was one of those.
Realize I looked in your eyes. You didn't want my loving anymore. That's when you hurt me. I'm feeling like this, I just can't go on anymore. So please remember how I feel about you. I could never really live without you. So come on back and see just what you mean to me. I need you.
We've now got Dillard and Clark, Train Leaves Here in the Morning. I've heard this before by, is it the Eagles?
Yeah, Dillard and Clark, one of the earliest country rock experiments. Doug Dillard had been in the Dillards, oddly enough, who were a bluegrass band initially. But he quit in 67, 68, and he briefly toured with the Byrds on the electric banjo. And then he put this group together with Gene Clark, who'd left the Byrds a year or two earlier. Train Leaves Here This Morning was on their first album, The Fantastic Expedition of Dillard and Clark. It was indeed covered 3 or 4 years later by the Eagles, who included Bernie Leadon, who'd been one of the band on the Fantastic Expedition album, and in fact co-wrote this song. So maybe it's a bit harsh to call it a cover version. He had as much right to claim it as either Dillard or Clark.
I lost 10 points just for being in the right place at exactly the wrong time. I looked right at the facts there, but I may as well have been completely blind. So if you see me walking all alone, don't look back, I'm just on my way back home. There's a train leaves here this morning, I don't know what I might be on. Sign me to a contract, baby said it would all be so lifelong. Looked around then for a reason when there wasn't something more to blame it on. But if time makes a difference while we're gone, tell me now and I won't be hanging on. There's a train here this morning, I don't know what I might be on. Thank you. 20 North Columbus was the address I had written on my sleeve. I don't know just what she wanted, might have been that it was getting time to leave. And I watched as the smoker passed it on. And I laughed when the joker said, lead on. There's a train leaves here this morning, I don't know what I might be on. There's a train leaves here this morning, I don't know what I might be on.
We've got another famous song, Bluebird, this time by Susan Carter, but that was a Buffalo Springfield's Bluebird. This is a cover version, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. It's a Buffalo Springfield song, Stephen Stills. Yeah, Susan Carter had made a few singles and an album before then when she was still known as Susan Rafe. She got together with Les Carter, who was a jazz DJ on Los Angeles radio, and she recorded... She married him and then recorded with Kurt before making this album, which was actually made in New York, I believe. But it's a lovely version of Bluebird, completely rearranging the song from the Buffalo Springfield version. She and her husband ran Music Revolution, which was kind of like a hip record store in Santa Monica Boulevard that specialized in underground sounds. She also worked on local radio as Nevada. So yeah, she had quite a few strings to her bows. There's other songs by James Taylor and Laura Nyro on the album as well. So, yeah, it's a highly recommended album, but I think this might be the standout track.
Listen to my bluebird laugh. She can tell you why. Deep within her heart you see, she knows only crying. There she sits aloft and purrs, strangest forgotten now, thinks only of you.
So next we've got Ezra Mohawk, I Am the Breeze. So who or what was Ezra Mohawk?
She also recorded with Frank Zappa, of Frank Zappa's label anyway, under the album, Sandy's album Is Here at Last. But she wasn't happy with the sound and she switched and came under the wing of a guy called Barry Friedman, who was kind of living in Laurel Canyon and worked for the record companies. He changed his name to Frazier Mohawk, and the two married, and he was responsible for producing Primordial Lovers, which was her 1970 album. And by then, Sandy Hurvitz was known as Ezra Mohawk as well. So again, a really nice album, probably not as well known as it should be.
And Sandy's songs had been recorded by the likes of the Shangri-Las?
Yeah, before she'd hooked up with Zappa, she'd been championed by George Shadow Morton, who was obviously the producer of the Shangri-Las, as well as Vanilla Fudge slightly later. And so he obviously used his influence to get her songs with them.
How do you pronounce it? Is it Souther or Souther?
I'm not sure if it's Souther or Souther. When he was later in the Souther Hillman Fury band, so I imagine it's Souther, but that doesn't sound right.
David, we've got J.D. Souther. Some people call it music. Now, he's got quite a songs and a real figure on Laurel Canyon scene.
That's right, yes. He played in a band with Glenn Frey called Long Branch Penny Whistle, coming to L.A. He had a relationship with Linda Ronstadt, also Judy Sill. He's the bandit and heartbreaker in the Judy Sill song, Jesus Was a Crossmaker. He was obviously a gifted songwriter, and he provided quite a few songs for the Eagles. But this is from his 1972 solo album. Some people call it music. It's the track. And the album's just called John David Souther. But again, yeah, somebody who's known as a songwriter, but you know, given average luck and a following wind, could have made it as a singer-songwriter in his own right.
Still going, I think, as well.
Yeah, well, I guess these people are still alive, they're still at it. But yeah, he's certainly made his money in the past. I mean, just writing songs for the Eagles would have set you up for life, I'd imagine.
You mentioned this artist earlier. We've got Judy Sill and Crane Angels. This is a lovely song.
It is. I think most people know that she had a pretty harrowing life, drug addiction, prostitution, and even had a spell in prison. But she was offered a deal, a publishing deal by the Turtles, who were trying to set up their own publishing company. And she was one of the first signings to David Geffen's new label, Asylum. Yeah, so the first album kicked off with this, The Crone Angels, although, as I just mentioned, she's probably best known for Jesus Was a Crossmaker. But, yeah, she had a number of really strong songs, but obviously personal issues took their toll, and she died in 1979, I think, from a drug overdose.
Yeah, it's incredible, the short span of time that she was recording, but he's a figure that I don't think was well known when she passed away in the late 70s, but she's quite well known now.
Yeah, I mean, she'd started off with quite a lot of publicity, and the local newspaper, the LA Free Press, said she was the most important new artist of the 70s thus far, and that was in 1972. But somehow she slipped off the radar. Like I say, she had personal issues. Yeah, I mean, we're talking 45 years since her death, and even now I think there are new releases devoted to material that's been unearthed in the last few years. So yeah, it, like Nick Drake, her star is brighter now than it was when she was alive.
slightly out of tune, but I'm sure I'm not to blame. Nothing's happened, but I think it will soon, so I sit here waiting for God in a train to the astral plane. Magic rings I made have turned my finger green, and my mystic roses died. Guess reality is not as it seems, so I sit here hoping for truth and a ride to the other side. Stole the only light I knew, and the darkness softly screamed. Holy visions disappeared from my view, but the angels come back and laugh in my dreams. I wonder what it means.
We just had Judy Sill, whose star is brighter, and a case could be made as well for another figure who's continued to make a lasting impression and died relatively soon after this this song, I think. So this is Gram Parsons' How Much I've Lied from his GP album.
Yeah, this was a song that I think I first heard by Elvis Costello on his Elvis Goes Country album, Almost Blue. But yeah, great song. Gram Parsons is now a legendary figure, as responsible as anyone, maybe bar Ricky Nelson, for kickstarting country rock, and also emphasising the rock element of it as well, hanging out with the Rolling Stones a lot and being part of their inner circle for a while. He'd obviously recorded with Fly and Burrito Brothers, who are also on this compilation, but this is from his much-delayed debut album, GP, which he'd been attempting to make for about 18 months before it actually came out in early 1973. But he was dead before the end of the year after overdosing.
Darling, there is something I must tell you, you must know. But it's so hard to say the words I feel. This fancy that I'm on has been going on too long. It's time we stop pretending things are real. I've been living deep in sin, I've been living blind, and I don't know just what's right or wrong. To take a chance on losing you, what's such a silly thing to do? A chance I might wake up and find you gone. Any brighter flame would be a lie. Blue, so blue, my love still burns for you. But I know that I'll only make you cry. A thief can only steal from you. He cannot break your heart. He'll never never touch the precious things inside. So one like you should surely be miles and miles away from me. Then you'd never care how much I've lied. So try to understand the pain. It takes so long when I explain. Please don't you forget how much I've lied.
So you've now got Ned Doheny.
Yeah, he was kind of from a well-to-do background. And because of that, he tended to have more self-confidence and stood up to people more than others who didn't have that kind of moneyed background. And as a result, I think he fell out with David Geffen, which is never a good thing to do, never an advisable thing to do, I don't think. But he'd initially been paired with Jackson Browne, and they'd gone off to some kind of strange kind of singer-songwriter type, college type thing, until he'd been cast out of that because he fell out with the guy who'd organised it, who we mentioned earlier. Again, Postcards from Hollywood is a really strong song. Did have some success as a songwriter later on.
Yeah, because I think Chaka Khan had a hit with one of his songs, and even Average White Band.
Yeah, he's one of those people who's kind of continued to exist in the soft white underbelly rather than being internationally well-known or anything like that. But yeah, his album, again, he'd recorded that after he'd initially been part of a kind of trio with Dave Mason and Cass Elliott, Mama Cass, and somehow he kind of got excluded from that as well. So wherever he went, he seemed to be excluded from things fairly quickly. So who knows?
It's good to know he carried on and has had, in his own right, quite a sustainable career since then. So let's hear Postcards from Hollywood.
Do best.
So please don't worry about my soul. I got summer in between the cold postcards from Hollywood, enchantment by the sea, como esta. Do you still think of me?
So now we've got David Blue and Outlaw Man. David Blue is a figure that, he was around a decade earlier, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. He'd initially called himself Dave Cohen, which is almost his real name. I think Stuart David Cohen is his real name. So yeah, he'd been part of the Greenwich Village folk scene along with Dylan and Tom Paxton and the like. So he'd recorded for Elektra back in 65 before making a debut album, which is very heavily Dylan influenced. Great album, but nevertheless, it is almost like an attempt to make a follow-up to Highway 61 Revisited. He then moved into Laurel Canyon. Joni Mitchell stepped in sometimes to pay the bills because he wasn't really earning much money. In fact, there's, I think, a story about how she got annoyed with him because she was paying his bills so that he could live. And then she suddenly found him walking down the road with a dozen red roses for some girl. She basically accused him of misusing the money he did have, if you like, and she ended up paying for him. But yeah, Outlaw Man is probably most well known. This is from his 1973 album Nice Baby and the Angel, but it's probably best known as an Eagles track. The Eagles needed a kind of rockier song that fitted in with their concept album Desperado, so Outlaw Man was perfect for that, although I think David Blue version is probably the definitive one.
I was born an outlaw, son. My legacy is the highway. On the highway I will run. In one hand I have a Bible, in the other I've got a gun. Don't you know me? I'm the wanted one. Woman, don't try to love me, don't try to understand. A life upon the road is the life of an outlaw man.
Let mama be the headed for San Francisco in a 56 Chevrolet.
Now we've got Howdy Moon, Cook With Honey. I wasn't familiar with Howdy Moon before this box set. Who were Howdy Moon then?
Well, the band member, John Lynn, described them as Crosby, Stills and Nash meets folk songs of Bulgaria. So, yeah, they were acoustic-based vocal trio. Richard Hovey and Valerie Carter were the other members. Lynn was the one who went on to be probably the most successful. He wrote Crazy For You by Madonna, and he also guided the careers of people like Miley Cyrus and Selena Gomez. It's included on here really because of Valerie Carter. It's her song and her lead vocal. And she stayed in Laurel Canyon and she provided backing vocals for most of the leading musicians of the area, people like Jackson Browne, Linda Ronstadt, James Taylor. And she also wrote Love Needs a Heart with Jackson Browne, which is one of his best songs, I think. So, yeah, this is something that slipped through the cracks, but it's a really lovely, sultry song.
Valerie Carter has got quite a later career.
Yeah, as I said, she went on to perform backing vocals for everybody locally and also co-write Love Needs a Heart, but she did have a solo career as well, yes.
Ooh.
Before we close with our final track, David, maybe there's something talking about the evolution of that Laurel Canyon scene, especially as it almost acts as a companion to the Heroes and Villains set, which predates this, as you see that arc of songwriters and bands, but then it increasingly get commercialised.
Yeah, I think by the mid-70s, Fleetwood Mac were based in that area by the time all three of the British musicians were living in Laurel Canyon. So, yeah, they went stratospheric, along with the Eagles as well, of course. So by that point, it's become a kind of almost an AOR thing. And it moves away slightly from the idealism of the late 60s to a kind of a slightly bloated corporate rock mentality, which is regrettable in a lot of ways, but that's how scenes evolve, really. They don't end up necessarily where you expect them to. And yeah, Laurel Canyon, initially, it attracted local musicians because it was so cheap. By the time of the early 70s, I think I mentioned in the sleeve notes, there were as many drug dealers in Laurel Canyon as there were musicians. There's a cocaine epidemic as bands made big money and they became targeted by drug dealers and hangers-on. So, as I say, that's a shame. But initially, it's a pretty idyllic scene in the late 60s where you've got bands helping each other out, almost like a proper community, self-contained musical community that's also handy for studios in LA. So, yeah, it's fascinating the way that it evolves over a period of time from the mid-60s to the late 60s and then into the early 70s. And you can see kind of the folk rock and the singer-songwriter movements taking place in Laurel Canyon in the late 60s. And we do have some great photos. You can see from the cover of the box set how rural it is and yet still so close to the record industry in LA.
Laurel Canyon more broadly, there's been a documentary about it. And was there something on Jakob Dylan as well?
There was, yeah. There are several documentaries about it. Obviously, it still holds some fascination. It does seem pretty idyllic for the period where we're covering, really. So, yeah, there have been other attempts to document the scene. But this is the first time, for example, that anybody's been allowed to use a Doors track on a compilation like this. Even Warner were absolutely gobsmacked when they agreed it could be included. They'd never had a Doors track license before for outside of the Warner WEA family, Rhino, whatever. So yeah, that's given it a bit more ballast, but we've got a lot of the major names. Unfortunately, some of the bands like the Eagles, people like Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, their contracts have been renegotiated over the years and they're now not allowed to appear on multi-artist compilations. I did speak to the Carole King office, for example, and they were keen to be included. They were keen for Carole to be included, but the record company wouldn't clear it. So it's just one of those things where musicians often have no control over what happens to their music 40, 50 years on.
We close with Love, I Still Wonder from the Out Here album. So who was in love in this period other than Arthur Lee?
Well, this is after Arthur Lee had kind of split up the Forever Changes band, saying something like these guys couldn't cut it anymore, which is obviously nonsense. But anyway, he put together a band that included a young guitarist who's sometimes known as Jay Donovan and sometimes as Jay Lewis. He'd been playing with a couple of the old love guys in a band called the Mustard Greens. I mean, sadly, he's now died along with Arthur, of course, but he claims to have completely written I Still Wonder on his own, although the credits always kind of split between him and Arthur Lee. And this is interesting in the sense that it's late 69, and it sounds like a Crosby, Stills and Nash outtake. The harmonies are just completely unlike normal love tracks. So, yeah, it just goes to show that the community affected everybody. Success of other bands affected bands who wanted that success but couldn't quite grasp it. And the result is something like I Still Wonder.
Fantastic. Well, highly recommend I See You Live on Love Street, music from Laurel Canyon from 1967 to 1975. And this is about as definitive as it's possible to get of that music scene from that period. Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure as always.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you, Jason. Thank you. Bye.
into my mind. Tell me what I've written for a second line. I can't see it anymore. 4 and 4 is 8 times 5. I didn't notice, but I think I took 9. Didn't need it, that's for sure. Down in the middle of a nightmare daydream, I still wonder why. Sometimes I can feel the pain in the back of my head and I'm going insane, but I've been there before. And I know that I'm not the same as I was when I started, for it's just another game. Can't fake it anymore. Down in the middle of a nightmare daydream, I still wonder why. I think I'll take some time and get myself together, but I know that I'll be back and
journey unfolds in the strange blue stories untold.